It's Brandy Taylor. Welcome to the Business Beauty Network podcast, where business meets beauty. It's not just lipstick, it's business. We will share thought-provoking conversations with business and beauty professionals. Our goal is to empower, motivate, and inspire you to take your business to the next level. This episode is sponsored by the Living Room Hair Lounge, where beauty and comfort is our top priority. Hi, everyone. I have an awesome show in store for you today. I had a great interview with Chantel Gray. Chantel is the owner of Pretty Girl Studios. She is also a hairstylist, and she has been in this industry for over 19 years, and she really knows what it takes to become the boss that she is today. She really shared her journey on how she got started in this industry and how what happened leading up to that. And she really shared some great business advice and business tips. And it's very clear that she's passionate not only about her clients and servicing them, but about the business side of beauty and really making sure she's operating properly in business and also teaching others how to do the same. I really enjoyed our conversation. I think you will too. Here it goes. Hey, welcome to the podcast. It's your host, Brandy Taylor. We have an awesome guest today, Chantel Gray. Welcome, Chantel.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. So, Chantel, you've been in this industry for almost 20 years now, and you're the owner of Pretty Girl Studios.
Yes, yes, that's my baby.
Yep, so we know you're, you know, this awesome hairstylist and salon owner, but before we get into that, I like to ask, is there something about you that most people wouldn't know?
So, I mean, well, some people pick it up after a while. I mean, I sing a little bit, but it's not something where people are like, oh, let me hear. I'm going to be like, no, if you want to hear me sing, come to church.
y'all don't know what y'all missing. Y'all gotta hear her sing.
Oh my gosh. Some people don't know that though, but yeah.
Really? Uh-huh. Some people don't know. Okay.
But yeah, and I haven't played in a while, but I play a little piano. It's real dusty though, because I just have not had time. What else would you not know about me? I think I'm becoming more of an introvert the older that I get. And that's what's really crazy, because I've definitely been the extrovert.
Wow. I could see, you know, how, you know, that can happen. Because I think I've changed a little bit. We all change.
Oh, yeah.
So I can see that. So what do you like to do in your spare time? Like, what are some of your hobbies?
Girl, eating. I know that probably sounds terrible. Listen, I love food, guys, like, oh, just going out and having a good time, going to a nice restaurant, definitely spending time with my husband and my family. Now that the weather is nice, been bike riding this summer, definitely catching some good movies and flicks, you know, just saw The Lion King, and that was good. But traveling is another thing that I love to do. Like, I'm itching to go out of town, but you know how it is when you're a boss. You know, you got to plan stuff out. So, yeah, those are some things that I absolutely love to do.
Awesome. Great. So, you have been a hairstylist, like we said, for almost 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
But how did you always know that you were a hairstylist? Like, how did you get into this industry?
Well, for me, I had the inclination that I wanted to get into doing hair when I was 12.
Oh,
so,
wow.
I was a young girl, you know, growing up. You eventually learn how to keep yourself up, do your hair and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, when puberty hit, you start noticing boys looking at you. So, you know, you really start to care about your appearance. And my grandmother, my mom's mom, actually was a licensed cosmetologist. So she would do our hair for Easter and stuff. But we didn't really have the salon experience all the time. But I would definitely take all my baby dolls and start kind of cutting their hair and styling it. And just from there, I just was like, you know, I really want to kind of get into this industry. And so when it was time to, like, take the test for, like, Cast King or Renaissance, I took the test and got accepted to Cast, but they didn't have cosmetology as a curriculum, since Cass is more of a business school.
Mm-hmm.
So I took up vocational music. So that's where the music part comes in. I knew how to sing, but I learned how to read music, play the piano, all that kind of stuff. And then shortly after that, after graduating, it was like, you gotta go to college. I went to college for like a quick second, like literally a semester, and was like, yeah, no. And so then after that, I was like, I really want to go to school for hair. So went on ahead and got enrolled and did all of that and got licensed after that.
Wow. So it's interesting that, you know, so you went to a traditional college at first before you went to cosmetology school.
Yeah, Wayne State University.
Oh, okay. So was your family supportive of that when you decided to make a switch?
Listen here. I think one of the stigmas that we see when it comes to the beauty industry is a lot of people think that it's not a real job. You know, they think we're just playing around in hair, that you can't really make a career out of it. And so being that my mom at the time was a single parent and she was just doing all of this raising my sister and myself alone, it was really, I feel like, pressure, because she wanted to make sure, one, that we grew up to be good, you know, solid women in this world. But then it was also this thought process that you have to go to college in order to be successful. You have to get a degree. And I'm not against that at all. Mm-hmm. You know, if that's what you want to do, go for it. But on the flip side, please don't sleep on a trade. Because right. It's people with degrees who are struggling right now.
It is.
And people with trades, we live in our best life. Right. I mean, I don't know how else to tell you. It's not just doing hair. I mean, it's a lot of work that goes into what we do. I mean, it is a science behind this. We're not just playing around, you know, it's chemicals involved. You start talking about the properties of the hair and scalp. And even now, it's this whole topic about stylists not shampooing their clients. And I just said, oh, are we? But I just feel like even on that part of the spectrum, that's just another way, in my opinion, that people are trying to skate around doing things the right way. You know, there are certain regulations that are in place, not just for the consumer or the customer, but to protect you as the owner. This is why there are rules. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes people are trying to cut corners so that they don't have to necessarily get state board involved. So they trying to, well, if you come shampooed and all we doing is braiding, and it's like, people not really shampooing their hair properly at home. You know, right. This is like, that's the main part of the service. So I could go on and on and on about that.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you say that, because I think the way America is now, it's like you go to high school, then you go to college, and you get this degree. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do that, then you're going to be working at McDonald's for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. That's how they kind of make it seem.
That's
like there's
exactly
no other
what
options.
They do. Yep.
Like, you can't do anything else. You gotta either go to college, get a degree, or you got to work at McDonald's.
Yep.
And it's like, that. There's so many other things out here.
So many.
Like, you don't have to... Mechanics make a lot of money, but you don't have to go to college to be a mechanic.
Heating and cooling. I mean, when I think about every time I've had to get the furnace looked at the salon, because these are the things that come with running a business, and just to come out to look is like $125. I'm like, excuse me, I'm in the wrong business.
Right,
so
wrong industry,
please
right?
don't sleep on a trade, you know. And the sad reality again is, you know, college is great. Sometimes I wonder what my life would have been like if I had the whole stand in the dorm kind of experience and things of that nature. But the sad reality is there are so many people right now stressing out over student loans.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not even doing anything with their degrees.
Well, oh, definitely.
You know, so this is not a bash college situation. It's just a real topic, I think, that needs to be talked about. Like, somebody even had rose up the statement basically saying, like, it's mighty funny that the government will give you all this money for a student loan, but ask for money for your business, and it's like pulling teeth.
It is. It's so much paperwork to go through. So many things you have to prove just to get money for your business, and you're trying to, you know, grow something, establish something, even if you've already been bringing in money
yourself.
Oh, yeah. And you got paper to show it. It's still hard But then they'll quickly give you a loan.
At 18, you ain't hardly got no credit. If your right. parents have not, because I mean, and I understand, you know, some families were not necessarily maybe aware of how to kind of teach, you know, us to get us prepared for adult life. You know, that's one of the things I was telling a friend. We were talking, we were saying like, yeah, you know, if I had to choose what should be taught in high school, I'm like, they need to be talking to them about finances and
about checkbook, right?
credit, you right. know, a mortgage, because right now I'm not using what is the probability of, you know, I'm exactly. not using that right now. So no. it was kind of like, I get you wanted us to expand our mind, but for me, I want to learn things that I can actually apply to life, because none of that matters when rent is due. Or like you say, when I'm trying to go and get a loan so that I can make my business grow and do the things that I need to do. You know, it's just really crazy that you'll go ahead and approve an 18-year-old who's fresh out of high school all this money for credit or a student loan. But then, like you said, somebody established coming with the numbers saying, I did this. And if I get anything, it's like, oh, we'll give you $5,000.
Exactly.
What am I going to do with that?
Right. We've all been there. So, I know you are, you know, a boss in your business. You are a salon owner. Mm-hmm. But can you tell us a little bit about the start of your journey as a hairstylist? Like,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, the interesting thing, though, is I was actually working as a teacher in the daycare. And like I said, I've always known, yes, girl, this is probably one of the reasons why I'm not ready for children, because I had the 2-year-olds. Oh my goodness. Yeah. And my director at the time would never let me get out of that room. She was like, you're so good with them. And I'm like, oh no. But anyway, I was working in a daycare. And like I said, I had always kind of had this passion that I wanted to do hair. And so one of the parents of one of the students was a stylist. And she was like, how would you like to come and help me out on the weekends? And I'm like, great. You know, this was my entrance into the whole salon world. So I went on ahead, was working with her on Saturdays as an assistant, shampooing and blow drying. And then, you know, I didn't even know anything about beauty school. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, so, you know, I would begin to talk to them. Like, I did know about an apprenticeship program. But the lady who was the owner of the salon at the time just wasn't really trying to do that. And so she was the one saying, won't you look into some beauty schools? And this was before Google and the internet. So I was in the yellow pages trying to look up schools. And at the time, the school I ended up enrolling in was called Robertson's International College of Beauty. Virginia Fair, I think, was phasing out at the time.
Okay.
So, and then it was about how I could get to school. So I was trying to find some place that wasn't too far. And I went in the afternoons because I was working during the day. And so I would go to school. When I got done on the weekends, I would help. You know, in the evenings, I started helping out in the salon a little more once people saw, you know, oh, okay, extra hands on deck, which meant extra money for them. They could take more people. And went through that, finished school, took the state board, and then just kind of hit the pavement, you know, trying to get myself out there. Was working with a young lady named Carmen Johnson. I love her to this day. Like, you know, she gave me my start, you know, and just kind of worked up under her. I watched her like a hawk when it came to certain things. And then started there. And she let me start kind of growing my clientele. So it was that whole thing, like, this generation, y'all got social media. We had to go out and pass out cards. We had to
right.
pass out flyers. You know, you would purchase a page in a hair book to try to get yourself out there.
Oh, man. They're not really popular anymore, are they?
No. What's popular now is these hair pages on Instagram. Okay. So now, okay. instead of you buying a page in a hair book, what you're doing is you're paying this page basically to promote your work.
So they have like pages that have huge followings.
Yes.
And they promote you. And
pretty
so
much.
You pay them. Okay. Yep, I didn't even know about that.
Oh yeah, that's how it works. The Cut Life. I mean, you have a lot of different pages now where if they have the following, they're kind of known for a specific look or maybe a certain style, like the Cut Life is known for a bunch of haircuts, you know, and then now we got all these hashtags and stuff. But yeah, so you pretty much do it that way now. But it was word of mouth. Mm-hmm. It was passing out flyers back then, and it was business cards. And then one of the ways that I found myself growing my clientele was doing wedding parties. So I would have clients that would be getting married, and they would want the entire wedding party to come to me. And after that, you know, people would see how good I did their hair for the wedding party, because updos was kind of like the thing, you know, pin curl ponytails. I know I'm probably dating myself. Yeah,
but I remember the pin curl ponytails.
French rolls, all of that. And I nailed those things. And so, but when they would see I would do those things really good, then it turned into, well, how much you charge for a regular? And they would become regular clients. And then just word travel, and you know how it goes. When you do good work and you're professional, people will refer you to people. And here we are, still in the game, 19 years later.
So you must really love it.
Oh, yes.
What about 6 years ago? You is that how long it's been since you had your salon?
Yes, yes. We celebrated 6 years, May 1st of this year.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
That's a milestone. Oh, man. To be in business for 6 years, definitely. That's
yes,
a milestone.
Indeed. Thank you. Yeah, you know, I started out working in a bunch of different salons first. You know, like, I get, even with this new generation of stylists, it's this anticipation to hurry up and get out there and just jump out there. No, I worked in 5 different atmospheres and salons, and I took notes the whole way. You know, when I originally got into the industry, I did not see myself owning it. I did not see myself having my own salon, let alone being a real for real entrepreneur, you know, right, like where you're now the employer. You know, I didn't see myself that way. It was, you know, I'm gonna just do these heads, I'm gonna pay this rent, and then I'm gonna keep it moving.
You know, it's interesting. I went, like, so for the expo, I'll go to beauty schools and talk to some of the students, and they have, I don't know, this misconception. They think that they're gonna get their license and own a salon. I've honestly heard them say that. And I'm like, really? Like, you know, so you the boss just straight out of school.
So. And I think it's great that they're ambitious, but every time I go and talk to the students, I give them the real deal. I would never want to rain on your parade of dreaming of being that. But we have to be realistic.
Yeah, you have to crawl before you walk.
I mean, because if you, I tell them, as simple as, if you can't even manage your money and your personal life, how you think this gonna roll over to your business? Because when we start talking about profit and loss statements, when we start talking about budgeting, when we start talking about taxes and payroll, you know, it's more than just setting your own hours, setting your own prices, using the products that you like. You know, like when we start talking about the business aspect of it, like, as quickly as people are opening up salons, it is people just as quickly closing them. And that's the part that's breaking my heart, because it's like, man, for this to be a billion-dollar industry, people see the money, but they don't see the business side that's attached to it. And and you get into it, you know, people getting these loans so that the salon could look beautiful. You done bought this expensive equipment, but don't have no clientele.
Right.
No marketing. Like, no, we have to crawl for sure before we walk.
And you definitely have to, like you said, understand the business and what it takes to operate a business. And also, it's good to learn from other people. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. Go work in a salon. Go train under somebody. Learn how it's done before you just get out of school and step out there. And like you said, you may have, I've seen people do that. They'll deck it out and they may make it look beautiful and it look nice. But when it came down to it, they really didn't have the clientele or the marketing skills or even the money to be able to hire the right people to help them to do that. And then the salon goes under. And that's part of the reason why I feel people always say it's finances why businesses go under within the first 5 years. Finances is a part of it, but the reason why is because we're not managing the money that's coming in. And then
some of us don't even know the money.
Don't even know the money.
Because as quickly as it's coming in, because we, like, and I'll be honest, you know, me being in this industry for as long as I have been, Booth rental is the way that it has been. Mm-hmm. Me entering into it, I didn't know anything about a commission-based salon. I didn't know anything about that type of structure, and it has been frowned upon for so long. And now that I'm on the other side, I'm trying to get stylists and salon owners to see commission is the way, and trying to get stylists to get out of the mindset of the salon is taking your money. No. Because when you start to really calculate these numbers, you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. see the tech, because you got to pay taxes, honey. Mm-hmm. You done made maybe six figures. 3% of that got to go to Uncle Sam.
Right.
But see, then we not even going to talk about the people who not quite sharing what they're really making. You know, that's the other part, trying to undercut the industry. And it's like, this is why they're trying to close more cosmetology schools. This is why in different states, they're trying to shift how many hours is needed to even finish the course, because their, you know, government money is no longer going to some of these schools, because they start to feel like this industry is a joke, because we're not being honest with mm-hmm. some of our things. We're not being integral. And so the government starts to feel like if we are helping these schools to be open so that it's a trade and people could learn a skill and get a job, but then they only making $25,000 a year, which we all know that can't be true. You know, if this is a $1 billion industry.
If you Google it, it says that to this day.
I know that, because that's all that they're reporting.
Mm-hmm.
How you doing that? And you driving a Bentley, or you driving a Mercedes, and we got Fendi bags and Louis bags. You know, I personally am never going to tell you you can't treat yourself. We work hard behind the chair,
mm-hmm.
you know, but when our priorities though are not necessarily in order, and you know, it's like, you're going to want to buy a house one day. This is what I tell the students when I go, this is the importance of the paper trail. You can't take your appointment book to the car dealership and say, hey, I did this amount of people this week and made this amount of money, and think they're going to let you get a car.
Right.
No, they want to see a paper trail. They want to see either your tax statements or a straight up pay stub.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Like, when I got my car, you know, as an entrepreneur, I had to prove my income.
Yes.
It was different from, you know, your traditional 9-to-5
Absolutely.
Worker. I had to show all my bank
yes.
statements.
Yes. Same here.
You know, it was different, mm-hmm. you know, for us. But if you haven't been, if you're handling all cash and you haven't been putting nobody in the bank, and you're not managing everything, then yeah, that could be trouble.
It's very much so trouble. And one person yeah. you don't want to play with is the Internal Revenue Service. I repeat.
Right. Exactly.
You don't want to play with them.
At all. So what do you think the biggest misconception is when it comes to the beauty industry?
That you can just be it and make all of this money like overnight. I really think that people think that what we do is just playing hair or just playing makeup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not understanding that there are people who come with hair issues, and we're treating some problems. Then you have the side of it where this is where people come and really just let their guard down. It's stuff that your hairstylists know that your family don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, we become counselors, we become encouragers, sometimes pastors, you know, having to talk people off the ledge. Like, we literally are like therapists to some people,
mm-hmm.
you know, and to be able to have the capacity to stand up all day, do what we do, I mean, literally remember things. Like, we go through all different stages of life with people, when people lose a loved one,
mm-hmm.
going through a divorce. I mean, like, life happens, and our guests will come and sit in our chair and share all of these things with us as we are servicing them. And, you know, they become like family too. And my thing is, if you don't have the passion, not just for the service you provide, but a heart for people, because I can tell you right now, it's so many, I'm seeing it, especially with social media. It's like a gimmick now,
mm-hmm.
you know, to get in this beauty industry. You take a couple of professional pictures, you upload a little live video, you get you a YouTube channel, and all of a sudden people think that you know what you're talking about, and that's not true. Exactly. It's so many people that are perpetrating a fraud, you know, because like I was telling somebody, you know, even when it comes to this whole thing about everybody being a boss and an entrepreneur and all of that is great, but I personally feel like you have to be called to it.
You do.
Because this is not something that should be taken lightly, and it is so much work that is really involved. Like, it's work. It's not just us playing around. It's really work and thought and skill that is attached to this.
Yeah, and I think another misconception would be that it's easy.
Oh, man.
That is easy. People think it's easy. Like, I could just go to hair school. I feel like it is a gift. I can't, I don't have a desire to do hair, never did, and I don't do hair, and it's not in me. So I don't think if I went and paid money right now, went to a beauty school, graduated in a year or whatever, and got my license, I would be a hairstylist.
Oh, you know what I mean? Oh, absolutely.
I would not be a hairstylist because it's not in me.
Yep.
But people, it's a gift. And people think that they could just, they don't know. I kind of feel bad for people because they haven't taken the time to really look at, okay, what are my skills? What am I passionate about? What am I good at? What always came natural to me?
Mm-hmm.
So they really don't know what they're good at. But they see you and your Instagram page, and they see this person, that person. They like, oh, I want to get in the beauty industry. I'm going to do hair. I'm about to go get my license. Sometimes they do go get it. And then those are the people who will go get the salons and they close 6 months later. Stuff like that.
They see the dollars. That's what I feel like. They see the money. In some instances, we have been looked at almost like, lack of a better term, a drug dealer, because it's quick money.
Quick money,
you know, and my thing is like, no, 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 it's not quick. Like, that's the part that people don't see.
It's
I didn't grow
quick until you put the grind in.
That's what I'm saying. Like, this is 19, like I tell people all the time, this is 19 years y'all looking at when you see my salon. This is 6 years in the making, and I was working in other people's establishment a whole 12 years before I jumped into ownership. This was not something that happened overnight. So if I can cut their time down, so it doesn't necessarily have to be 19 years before you feel like you're bringing some decent money. But my thing is, you know, you got to be willing to put the work in. There is such an entitlement mindset with some of the up and coming generation, and it's like, no, baby, nobody owes you anything. You have to get up and put some work in. You know, even with this industry, the flexibility that you can potentially have, like I said, the whole being your own boss, who cares if you could set your hours and, you know, name your price? But if you're gonna be a professional, if you're not gonna be on time for the, even if you don't start till noon, if you're still getting there at one, when you put somebody on the books at noon, this is not helping your business. There is still a work ethic that is involved with being your own boss. And I tell people all the time, if you can't practice a good work ethic for somebody else's dream, how you think it's just gonna cut on when it's your turn?
Right.
No, you gotta practice these habits.
You do. You do. And everyone, you know, and I don't think everyone that may have the gifting in this industry is necessarily an entrepreneur either.
Absolutely. That is very true because, you know, like I said, it's this whole thing. Everybody want to be a boss. Everybody want to be in charge. Listen, you have to know your role because some people are meant to be team players. If everybody was supposed to be a boss, then those of us who are called to be bosses wouldn't have no employees. Right. Like, there's a role for everybody.
There is.
You know, and sometimes it's just about finding the right situation and maybe the right team to plug into so that you can flourish at your gift. You know, like when I think about the future of Pretty Girl Studios, the goal is to eventually have like a salon manager. So I can just go back to just servicing the clients, you know what I'm saying? And worrying about the creative side of things. Like right now, I feel like in my own stage of where I'm trying to take the business, I'm in business mode. I'm in manager mode. I'm in owner mode. I'm in just really get this structure established. I'm not thinking about the photo shoots and all the fancy colors and the different cuts. Now, I'm skilled in all of that stuff. But as the owner, that's the part that I think some people don't realize, that all of the responsibility falls on you. And if you are not good with your money, good with management, if you one of those people who get stressed really quickly, I don't know if entrepreneurship is for you, but you can just literally come to work and just do what you love and go home. I think that that's the smart way. So it's nothing wrong with if you want to just be a stylist, working in a salon, servicing clients. Don't feel the pressure of having to be the boss. You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. sometimes I see it, again, on social media, job means just over broke. That's not true.
No.
That's not true, because everybody's not meant to be an entrepreneur. Some people are meant to work somewhere. Like when I think about when it's time for me to have maybe a social media manager on the team, they thrive in that. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
So let them do what they do best and be a part of your team. It's just going to make everything else look better, flow better, be presented better. You know, we got to start it and from that perspective and wanting to, you know, have a little bit more teamwork than just trying to be in charge and working solo.
Exactly.
This episode is sponsored by the Living Room Hair Lounge, where beauty and comfort is our top priority. The Living Room Hair Lounge specializes in color, trendy, precise haircuts, hair extensions, services, and natural texture styling. Centrally located in the heart of downtown Ferndale at 22747 Woodward Avenue, Suite 204. Check out our work and follow us on Instagram at The Living Room Hair Lounge and on Facebook at The Living Room Hair Lounge. Book one of our talented stylists at www.vagaro.com/The Living Room Hair Lounge or by calling 248-268-1632. We hope to see you soon at the Living Room Hair Lounge, where your beauty and comfort is our top priority.
And one thing I can say about you is that you're wearing many hats.
Oh, gosh.
And as an entrepreneur, you know, you still get up and post your stuff all the time. You're still educating yourself on, you know, the different techniques and mm-hmm. everything. So can you speak to some of that as well?
Oh, yeah, because here's the thing. If you want to last, you have to stay up on what's new. I can't tell you how many seasoned veteran stylists get stuck. And you can tell because they stop going to get educated. You know, they're not necessarily giving back. I don't know if it's fear. Maybe it's laziness. Some people get stuck in their ways.
Mm-hmm.
But me personally, I feel like I want something that's lasting. You know, I want a business that when it is time for me to retire and sit back, it's because I choose to, not because I'm closing the doors because business done fell apart.
Right.
You know, I want to build a legacy, not just for myself, but for my family. And, you know, have we even heard of any Black-owned franchise salons?
Right.
No. You know, and it's kind of like, well, why don't we have that, you know? And then when I think about just, again, how much money this industry can make, we don't retire, you know? And if we do, we're not retiring from our businesses. Some of us quit and go do something else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I think about my license and how I'm licensed to do everything, again, it breaks my heart when I see people struggling. It's like, well, if hair didn't do it, try the lashes. If lashes and brows mm-hmm. and skincare didn't do it, do nails. It's like, it's so much money that
right.
can be made, you know? And so it makes me say, well, what happened? Did you get burned out? And part of the burnout, I think, is because of the lack of structure. Until we get certain structure in place and learn how to flow and function as a business so that we don't necessarily have to wear 1,000 hats. We
right.
can now delegate responsibilities to people, I feel like we won't get burnt out so quickly.
Yeah. And that's one thing, as a leader, you have to be able to build up other leaders.
Yes.
So you have to be able to train other people to do what you do, because you can't do everything. And then eventually, if you want to scale and grow your business, then you will have to hire that salon manager, like you said. You will have to have a marketing manager.
Mm-hmm.
You will have to have those things.
Yeah.
But if you don't even understand the business side, like you said, just in balancing the books and
yeah.
keeping the whole system running in order, then how are you even going to get to the point where you can hire somebody?
Absolutely.
And, you know, be able to just focus on your clients and then work on the things you love to do, and then you hire somebody to do the other things so mm-hmm. that you can do what you're most passionate about.
Yeah.
Like, eventually, we all got to start so we're doing everything, you know, in our business, but you don't want to do that forever.
Right. you don't. And then I think, too, the other factor of that, you know, what you're bringing up about, you know, being even in a position to hire people, you know, it goes back to knowing the business when it comes down to the cost of business. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so many different price lists out here when it comes to certain things. We don't even know what the industry standard is anymore.
Right.
Because we have so many situations. Again, it goes back to the lack of structure. And again, I'm not saying you can't be a free agent. You know, I get it. You have to do what works for you. But I do feel like if we saw more structured situations, especially in the African-American community, I feel like it could potentially cut down on the whole people undercutting the industry. You just getting started and you charging what the beauty schools is charging or less just to grow a clientele instead of maybe working at a commission salon. So you're getting in-house training and you're getting paid. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. To learn the ropes. But at the same time, the consumer that comes in, that gets serviced by you, is going to pay industry standard because that salon has already made sure that those prices match that. And then when you think about why these prices are set the way that they're set, and you look at a structured situation, and I'll use my salon for an example. You know, this would be the, we're actually in our second year of being a commission-based situation. And you know, when I think about our price list, when my clients come in, when you look at the order of how things is going, you're not just paying me, you're paying for that receptionist, you're paying for that website, you're paying for this coffee, you're paying for the thing to run. Like, I know I can't do this alone. Mm-hmm. So you supporting my business is also helping put food on the table of my two associates that's working with mm-hmm. me. And then it continues as we hire other people. You know, because of the way we have our salon set up, you know, you don't have a budget for a receptionist to take the phone calls and book the appointments for you. You trying to curl hair, then you got an earpiece in your ear, which is being rude to the client who's paying mm-hmm. for your time. Then you stopping and you texting, and you know, it's a lot. And my thing is, like, we have to realize that we don't have to be a one-man show. You know, we do have technology now where you can do the online booking and things of that nature, but then there are situations where you might have some old school people who not
yeah.
really digitally aware.
Right.
They don't know how to work things. So it's good, because I even think about when I have to call DT or somebody. Sometimes you get tired of talking to the animated people. You want to talk to a human being. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there is still a place for a receptionist. You know what I mean? Or whatever you want to call it. We call it guest service representative at our salon.
Or even, like, I just had an interview with a virtual assistant.
Exactly.
And she does some of that stuff. So they don't have, the salon she worked with, they don't have someone in-house, but, you know, the call is routed to her.
Uh-huh.
And she'll take you any questions.
Yeah.
And the appointments, like, they have the online setup.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, for those extra questions, she's able to answer.
Mm-hmm.
And the stylist doesn't have to worry about that.
Right.
They can service their clients.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and but, you know, you have to, people don't understand that you have to count up the cost to operate in business.
Exactly, because you got to pay for that.
Before you set your prices.
Yes, yes.
You can't just be like, oh, I'm going to charge $50 for this. No, you have to count up the cost.
Yeah, because what does it cost you to do that service? Then the time involved. You know, like, I don't understand, in, like, you know, oh, gosh, because I don't want to step on no toes, but, like, when the whole $50 weave shop kind of came into fruition. Mm-hmm. I get what you were trying to do, and it really was to get you in the door, because you really wasn't paying $50 for just, you know, the whole shebang if you walked in there and wanted to get a weave. However, because in some instances it goes back to trying to cut corners,
mm-hmm.
we don't necessarily want to have to shampoo people, so we gonna hire, you know, some girls who know how to braid, and then it's gonna be like a little assembly line, and you know, they just gonna braid here, then this person gonna sew it in, and then this person gonna style it, and you know, it ended up kind of being somewhat of a bust because of the lack of training. You know, some of these girls didn't know how to do the proper braiding for the foundation. I can't tell you how many phone calls we got talking about, I went there, and you know, they messed my weave up. Can you fix it? And I'm like, I can't work on top of other people's work. But what I can do is take it down for you and do it again. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's about value. Like, are you adding value? And are you making people understand what that looks like? You know, there's people who love Groupon. I get it. We all like a good deal at some point. But certain things should not be cheap. And as the stylist, we got to start, like you said, counting up the cost. You know, when you think about being on that one client for 3 hours, you really think $50 is sufficient?
Exactly.
To pay them. And they've been in your salon for 3 hours servicing you. Like, that's not fair. You know, whether it's a color service, a haircut, like, we have to really start being realistic when it comes to our pricing. And that's why I'm like, the new generation, stop trying to hustle, because that's what it is. Mm-hmm. You hustling, but then you be done work so hard to get that clientele. When you figure out your worth and want to go up, you're going to lose all of them people, and you almost starting over.
They're going to look for the next cheap girl.
Exactly.
They're not going to come to you.
Exactly. So in my opinion, I feel like you need to just start off in a salon assistant, let them pay you hourly, but these clients going to know to pay the salon fee. And then when you work your way up to be a stylist, the prices are already going to be set. So even if you decide you want to work in that salon for so many years and then you're going to go, your clients are already used to paying, you see what I'm saying, what the industry standard is.
Mm-hmm. And so what I can say about you is that that's what separates you. You're very business. You're very entrepreneurial. You stay on top of your education. You're studying how to make your salon better and how to run in operations. Mm-hmm. What can you say contributed to that? Because everybody's not like that, you know?
Yeah. I think for me, just my own personal growth and my own personal goals and aspirations. You know, like I said, when I started out, it was booth rental. That's all I knew. And then when it was time for me to open the salon, that's what I did. And then I felt like I was hitting the ceiling. I couldn't go. I'm working just as hard, not if not harder. And I had a full salon of stylists. Mm-hmm. All of my booths were filled. And people were paying me. But the bills was not, you see what I'm saying?
Right.
It just wasn't adding up. So I had to reassess and see, like, it shouldn't be me still grinding. Like, and that's what I'm saying. That's the misconception sometimes people have about business owners. Even when it's booth rent, people figure they be trying to count your money. And listen, get out of my pockets. Because the other side of this is, we got two situations going on here. Just like I got rent here, I got a mortgage at home. Mm-hmm. I got a phone bill here, got a phone bill at home. Light bill here, light bill at
so
home.
So you tell me, they're like, oh, well, we pay you $250 a week times this, and you got this many. Are you serious?
People, you would be surprised.
Wow.
You know, and that's why a lot of times I say, okay, well, then it's time for you to go and get your own, and then you'll see. Because it's so easy to say that the owner needs to be doing this and they need to be doing that. And when it's a booth rental situation, you're technically your own boss. Mm-hmm. I'm just housing you here. You're paying me rent to, but I'm not responsible if your clientele is whack. I'm not responsible
right.
for advertising for you. And you even have stylists who literally think that booth rent should be maybe 100, 200 is a lot, you know, and it's kind of like, where y'all come from? Like, you know, I actually had someone reach out to me at one point. Somebody was looking for a space. This was back when I was booth rent. And he had made a whole status talking about, I have a huge clientele, but I don't want to pay no more than $100 a week for booth rent. And you think that's fair for you to be running my gas, my lights, my water, and only pay $100? Meanwhile, you leaving out, depending on what you charge and how many people you really doing, making a good $2,000, $3,000 a week, and I'm supposed to just get $100?
Wow.
But people don't understand the cost of business. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm saying. Like, I want salon owners to start standing up for what you need, really. And then I need stylists to really, really, really kind of take a step back and let's really look at this thing for what it is. Because if you think when that salon owner may go up on their booth rent that they really trying to, like, you know, take from you or whatever, it's like half the time when some, at least for me, when I went up, it was one more client that you had to take. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, when you start, if I'm going up $50 and you charge $50 for a press and curl, girl, just add one more person to the roster. You see what I'm saying? Like, it's not hitting your pockets that bad. But again, I think it's that poverty mindset sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's this, no, this part of the reason why you don't want to be the boss. You just want to, you want to work somewhere and let them have all the responsibility and you get the benefits of it. Meanwhile, the owner is stressing out, mm-hmm. you know, trying to juggle everything. So I feel like that's a real conversation that may need to be had in the beauty industry to give some people a realistic view of what that looks like. So when your salon owner is saying they need X, Y, and Z from you, I mean, it comes from a real place.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think, you know, if you just keep sharing the knowledge, obviously you're very passionate about the industry and passionate about your craft.
Oh, yeah.
And you love, you truly love, especially to be in it for this long.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I appreciate it. And I know of other people that when you go to the schools and you speak, really appreciate what you share. Because I know, like, just being in the beauty industry myself, coming up, a lot of people didn't share this stuff.
Mm-hmm. And that's
and
one
talk
of the,
about this stuff.
That's one of the things I have been, like, when I do see certain veterans, you know, I do ask them, like, well, do you go back to the schools? Do you talk? Because, again, that's the other part. We cannot be mad at what's going on and we not doing nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to speak up. And I get it. You know, young people are going to do what they do. Sometimes, like I say, they can be very ambitious and they just have their own little plan. Sometimes you got to just let them go and bump their little head. And then, you know, sometimes they'll circle back around. But I think it's very important that those of us who have the knowledge go back and share. We have to stop viewing the up and coming or just even our peers as this competition. Because at the end of the day, we all, first of all, you can't do everybody here in this world. Like, you can't. I don't want to do everybody here. I want to go home and be with my husband and spend time. I don't want to be at the salon all day.
Exactly.
And sometimes people may not want to pay that. I feel like it would be smart to get yourself established so when that happens, you be done train people and you could give those people to them, give them their start. Because a lot of times when it's a situation like that, these clients don't necessarily, especially with a lot of the things that people are doing, taking people money, deposits, and they not, you know, really professional. You know, I think about my clients every time I'm getting ready to go out of town or something, I want to leave them in good hands. You know, so this is why I'm working on building my team. Now, I do have people that I have referred them to that don't work in my salon. But at this point, it's about building my salon and building my people. So, you know, a lot of times they used to the atmosphere already. They know what they're going to get. They know when they come in the door, they're going to be treated right. They know you're not going to be late. When you have this stuff established, they'll feel more comfortable. And a lot of times they don't want to change a different atmosphere. They don't want to try to find somebody new to, you know, cover them this week. They want to just keep coming where they've been coming. So, you know, that's what I'm doing, working to build my team. So when it is time for me to take that break, you only got to go to her this week. And then as my prices go up, if you decide, you know, this is too much for you, she is right in your price range and you could stay in the same atmosphere and you know you're going to get the same treatment. You know why? Because I trained her.
Right. So train them up instead of looking at them as competition,
yes,
right?
Train yes.
Instead of looking at them. Because there's enough out here for all of us.
All of us. I mean, I don't think God would have blessed all of us with this talent if it was just exclusive to a certain amount of people.
Right. Like, there's millions of people in this world. Like you said, you can't do everybody.
No.
And everybody's not going to be for you. He'll send the right people for you and for whoever else. And so you don't have to worry about competition. Because I think that's a big thing in what it was.
Oh,
yeah.
The
whole competition thing. So why are you different?
I think because I'm growing to be aware of the fact that at the end of the day, I'm my own competition. I just want to be great at what I do. I know I'm not going to please everybody, and I'm not going to try to. I know that I'm different, and I offer something that is unique to me and the people that will be drawn to me. And with me understanding that, I feel like it weeds out certain thought processes, it weeds out certain conversations, because at the end of the day, I want to see everybody win, you know, and I want us all to be prosperous. Because again, like I said, you know, when you look at other cultures and different businesses, they don't even let certain family members get out there on their own unless they done worked in this established business for a while. The money is there and they send them out to be successful. Like, we don't do that. We sometimes are insecure. We're not aware of our unique factor that we bring to the table. Like, I don't want to do hair just like you. I want to do hair like how I do it. Right. Now, I'm inspired by a lot of people. I admire a lot of people. But I think the problem comes in when you are not confident in your own ability and when you're not confident in the fact that, hey, I'm just as dope as they are. You know what I'm saying? And then the flip side of that is you have to be careful looking and admiring people because you don't know what that individual went through, has gone through, is going through to get what they have and be where they are. So, you know, I draw a lot of inspiration from people, but I've learned how to cut it off because there is a space sometimes if you're not careful. You know, especially when you feel like you may be starting over, like how I feel like I'm starting over. You know, yes, I've been in the industry this long, but because of what I'm trying to build now, starting over. And so it's easy to get distracted.
Yes.
You know, but you have to stay on course and know that my path is my path. Their path is their path. And what's for me is for me. All I have to do is stay focused on what I'm doing, walk this thing out, and before I know it, things are going to flourish like I know that they will.
They will. I love that.
Yep.
So how do you define success?
Ooh, success. I feel like for me, I define success by, you know, I definitely have some goals and dreams and aspirations, but I'm not wanting for nothing. And I feel like that's success because I don't have the stress over certain things. Now, I'm not saying that it doesn't come with its low. It does. But when I sit back and think about the majority of the things that I've prayed for, I have them. And I'm good with that. I know the rest will follow. You know what I'm saying? But, man, when you are happy and content, that's success to me. Because there's so many people who don't have that inwardly.
Right.
And they have the material things.
Right. Amen to that. So what keeps you motivated?
Ooh, what keeps me motivated? Girl, my love for food. No, I'm teasing. I'm teasing. What keeps me motivated? I think it's just knowing my purpose. You know, because I really feel like I'm called to do this thing and I know that God has a specific assignment for me. And that is people waiting on me to fulfill said assignment because their blessing is attached to it. That's what keeps me motivated because I know it's some people who I'm attached to too. I want y'all to fulfill your thing because I don't want you holding up my blessing because you scared to walk out your purpose and identity and all of that. So I feel the same way. I can't let God down and I can't let down the people who are waiting on Chantel to fulfill the very thing that she's supposed to do in this industry. It was people waiting on me. And when I think about that, I can't let them down. I have to see this thing through. That's what keeps me motivated.
And you're not going to. I feel it. I know you got the fight in you, and you're not going to let them down.
Yeah.
So you're going to get it done. And you're already walking in it.
Oh, yeah.
Already walking in it. So I am a bookie. And I always love to find out what other entrepreneurs are reading.
Okay.
Or what their favorite book is. So can you tell me either what you're reading now or what your favorite book is?
Well, I kind of picked it up and put it back down, but I've been actually reading a couple of books. So Soar by Bishop T.D. Jakes.
Yep.
And Michelle Obama's book.
Okay.
I've been reading that. And just to even read her story.
Yeah.
Of just her background, everything she's gone through, even up into meeting President Obama, and just, you know, man, when I look at both President Obama and T.D. Jakes, when you think about how influential both of these men are, the impact they've had on this world, I look at their wives, because it take a strong, focused, praying woman to be able to handle the magnitude of the lifestyles that both of them are living. You know, when I think about Bishop Jakes, and this man is known all over the world, movies and all of this stuff, big church, they definitely done went through some stuff, but he got this wife that has been praying him through, like, that has just been there. And yeah, he's out in the forefront, but she in the background, you know what I'm saying? And then you got somebody like Barack. It's like Michelle had a lot to do with that. And so,
that's a lot.
Yes. And so it encourages me, and I draw from both of those situations. And it even challenges me in moments where I know I have a wonderful mate. But it also makes me say, just as supportive as he's being to me with my dreams, I'm trying to make sure I'm doing the same for him, you know what I mean? Because it's easy to get caught up in what we doing, you know, as a business owner and all that good stuff. But I want to make sure that I'm giving that same energy back to my mate. This is why I can't be in the shop all night.
Right.
You know, this is why I can't be all things to all people. You know, I have to learn how to cut things off and have that balance.
Yeah. Because that's important. That's your first ministry, right?
Yep.
At home. Mm-hmm. So that's very important. So what's your favorite business tool? Like, what's your favorite tool you like to use for your business?
Ooh. For the business? Because I'm like, for hair. Business, my favorite tool, it probably would be irritating social media. I ain't gonna lie.
Already? Okay.
I think social media is cool, because I do like to be able to post my videos and kind of engage. So, you know, I'm learning all of that too. You know, like, you, again, it's that staying abreast, you know. So on my downtime, when I'm not working, you know, I'm trying to make sure that I'm creating content. So again, it's making different creative juices about myself and my business and what I can do to make us different. Because again, you see this all day on social media, nothing but hairstyles and things of that nature. So you do start to feel like, well, what is it that I bring to the table that's different? And so that's exactly what I actually like social media. Like, it's a blessing and a curse, I ain't gonna lie.
It is.
That is one of my favorite tools, because, you know, just to even get the feedback from people. And not just even when it comes to, like, business, sharing my personal life with my husband and different things like that, you can kind of give people a little bit of a window to the other side of you. Because I think a lot of times people do just kind of know me as a hairstylist and an owner. It's like, no, I can be silly. I like to have fun. You know, again, I love to eat, you know, so little stuff like that. Just kind of let them know that there is a different side to Chantel. So
that's great. So do you have anything coming up, like in the pipeline? What's next for you?
Well, I definitely have been training my stylist, and we actually have an educational class getting ready to happen. We're hosting Hanzo Shears, which is a company that has the best haircutting shears on the planet.
Okay.
And I actually purchased my first pair when we went to the premiere show in Orlando. And they actually hit me up like, hey, would you be open to hosting? And I'm like, sure. So we're preparing for that. And really just kind of growing my team. That's really what I'm working on right now. Kind of taking a step back, but grooming and going into the schools more, trying to build more relationship with the schools and letting them see a black face in this industry.
That's good too. Yep. They need that. Even still to this day, even though the beauty industry is so large within the black community, we put millions and billions of dollars back into it. Our face isn't seen enough in those beauty schools. They still are not training people for our hair.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely it's needed. Well, that is great. So how can people reach you and connect with you? What's the best way to connected with you?
All right, well, I have Instagram, of course. You can check out our page at I Am Pretty Girl Studios. That's all one word. You can also check out our website, www.prettygirl.studio. I'm also on Facebook. You can type in Chantel Gray. And then if you want to email me, you can email me at contact@prettygirl.studio.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Chantel. It's been absolutely great having you on the podcast.
Thank
today.
You so much for
and
having
we'll,
me.
You're welcome. And we'll also include all your social media links.
Okay.
And the show notes as well.
Excellent. Excellent.
Well, that's all I have for you today. I hope you enjoyed this awesome interview with Chantel. And as always, stay great.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Beauty Network podcast. Please subscribe and support our podcast. Please share it. Share it with your friends and family. Also, connect with us. We want to hear from you. Leave us comments. Let us know what you're enjoying about the podcast. Also, email us at bbnetworkpodcast@gmail.com. You can also connect with me on Instagram at I Am Brandy Taylor and at Exquisite Looks. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Exquisite Looks, and you can check out my website at exquisitelooks.com. I really hope to hear from you and connect with you soon. Remember that all things are possible if you only believe. Stay great.